this person that did it is a monster.
Radical district attorneys funded by globalist networks have turned American cities into crime zones with soft-on-crime policy results that innocent civilians have paid with their lives.
5 homicides in 2 weeks. Austin police say the recent string of killings are not connected.
This seems to happen every year. There seems to be usually a week or two where there's just quite a few homicides all in the same time period. These are all very different cases.
Pushback is finally arriving. In Travis County, Texas, DA Jose Garza, elected in 2020 on justice reform, promises of diversion, pretrial releases, and reduced prosecutions, is now under federal scrutiny. The U.S. House Judiciary Committee is demanding documents on his policies that allegedly shield illegal immigrants and undermine law enforcement with a July 7th deadline, but have they missed the mark? After ignoring piles of murder indictments, repeated clashes with police, and a perception of impunity for repeat offenders, Garza's equity experiment has cracked under the weight of stark reality.
Our approach to public safety works, but it flies in the face of right-wing Republican ideology. We have been told for so long that if we want to be safe, that all we need to do is lock up more and more people, particularly people in communities of color and working class communities. And we're told that if we just lock up more people like that, then our communities will be safe. But we know that that's not true.
You're not going to be protected in 800 plus cities and jurisdictions the Democrats run. They're monsters. And so to the globalist, and the same thing's happening in Europe and other areas, you murdered Jamie White. You opened the door. You created the climate. You created the conditions on purpose. George Soros, Alexander Soros, you murdered Jamie White. And President Trump needs to point his finger at the Austin scumbag DA and say, you little monster, you are responsible, Jose Garza, just as much as the person or people that murdered our reporter.
And so what we have is a list of cases that may be cases that would have been subject to a 17-151 motion. We have reviewed all of those cases. The overwhelming majority of them were not indicted because the suspect had unmet mental health needs and is receiving mental health services as part of our mental health diversion program.
Garza would argue that there has been a significant drop in 2025 in overall violent crime, but compared to what? Garza increased Austin homicide rates to a record high in his first year, while in Garza's first 2 years, his office dismissed or declined 12,700 felony charges. This pattern isn't a coincidence. It's a coordinated assault on public safety. Compare that disaster to Oakland, California, Soros-backed DA Pamela Price's tenure that brought skyrocketing homicides, brazen thefts, and business exodus through slashed prosecutions and decarceration.
It's hard to be here and not be a little sad if you like sports. Behind us is a cemetery. The Oakland A's, the Oakland Raiders, and Golden State Warriors all used to play right in here. Financial issues in the city, San Francisco, Las Vegas had better offers. You watch Moneyball, I mean, Golden State Warriors, all gone now.
Voters recalled her in a 2024 landslide. Under her replacement, homicides plunged 30 to 33%.
If you called the cops here, how long would it take for them to show up?
Brother, look, you see all these bullet holes in me? I got bullet holes all in my body, bro. You gonna be sitting there. Sometimes, bro, you'll see a motherfucker dead sitting in the middle of the street for hours.
It's stupidly obvious. When you stop treating criminals as victims and start prosecuting them, the streets actually get safer. No root causes willy-nilly pandering, just results. With Congress now focusing on Garza, Travis County could follow Oakland's path before more blood is shed. The Soros House of Cards is buckling. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The InfoWar continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I know we got another video here of Trump talking about communism. And again, it is good to see him talking about communism. It's honestly kind of weird to me, considering the fact that growing up, communism was like a literal joke. We used to make skits. And we always made the bad guys communists because it just sounded funny. Like, look out, a communist. It's like, oh, what is this, the 1950s? But I think that's symptomatic of how we've gotten here. I think we've let our guard down and allowed a bunch of literal communists to insinuate themselves into our power structures. And now it's a very real threat. And of course, we've talked endlessly about this, the fact that communism requires there to be capitalistic abuse for them to have an argument to make in the first place. So this isn't even, you can't just fix this by demonizing communism. You have to actually provide a viable path towards a better life for your people, because right now the only ones making an argument are the communists. So you can talk about how they're going to live in squalor, but a lot of them live in squalor right now, so they're willing to take the risk. They don't care. They maybe don't recognize, or I mean, really, they just don't care. They just don't care. And on top of all of this is the racial aspect, is that this isn't just an ideologically driven communism. This is a mix of all of these poisonous ideologies. It's the anti-whiteism that is inextricably tied to communism. Now, again, this is the success of the brainwashing of the powers that be, who, as we've explained the entire time, were demonizing white people because they want to demonize the things that white people came up with and created and invented and defined ourselves by. If you want to destroy freedom, you got to destroy the founding fathers. You want to destroy people's ability to resist you, you need to destroy the Constitution. You want to destroy the Constitution, you have to undermine the people that wrote the Constitution, so they demonize them as white slavers, and so therefore the Constitution must be bad. How could such evil people ever come up with something good? It's not really that sophisticated, but it's extremely effective. And I just wonder, I mean, how serious are we taking this threat? Because there are about 10 million things that the Trump administration could be doing to mitigate this threat. They're not doing it. And the people on the right, like Ben Shapiro, are coming to the exactly wrong conclusions about who is responsible for this. He blames the election of socialists on white people, when white people are the only demographic that doesn't vote majority for socialism, and that includes Jews. So let's go to Ben Shapiro. As you know, you tell me what's you tell me what you think is motivating him. He seems to be sincerely in fear of Zoran Mamdani. He seems to genuinely be concerned about the way New York is going and the way people are voting for Democrats, and for specifically Democratic Socialists. The question is, if he was genuine about that, because he certainly seems genuine, if he really was, why would he be lying about it? Why would he be distracting from it? Why would he be blaming people that aren't to blame for it? Does he really care? I don't know, actually. Here's what Ben Shapiro said about the socialist sweep that occurred in New York earlier this week.
Who's leading all of this? Who's leading all of this? Who is the DSA? As we pointed out, it is overeducated, useless white people. Some of them are white, some of them are not. But bottom line is, this professional, disproportionately white, the professional useless class, they've been manufactured over the last 20, 30, 40 years in university classrooms. They've been majoring in absolute junk. They're unemployable losers who have never held a real job, but they did go to the best colleges for years and then more years, and then they can't get real jobs. So they end up as community organizers or agitators or political aides for crappy candidates who hate the country. The Democratic Socialists of America is a make-work machine for college-educated losers. That's what it is.
Kind of, you're kind of failing to, you know, hold down that seething hatred for white people you have there, Ben. Democracy is the theory that the common people know what they want and deserve to get it good and hard. Great. Can we, I just want to look up a few things. I mean, as far as I know, pretty sure the DSA is like completely non-white. I'm pretty sure. Like, I first heard about it because it was like Cenk Uygur putting it together. He's not white. Should we do some investigation? Crew, can you search who founded the DSA? Maybe who runs them right now? I just want to see. He could be right. Could be white people. Of course, white people are not the majority at colleges these days. They're certainly not the majority of professors. The majority of professors are, you know, vicious communists for the most part. And any attempt we make to rein in the university system seems always hamstrung by Jews, for the most part. I mean, if you really think about, you know, all the ideologies that Ben Shapiro is raging against and saying or so. I mean, not all of them, obviously. How did he put it? You know, worthless white people, whatever he said. White people are under an attack consistently. A 25-person national political committee, like a Soviet. Some sort of Bolshevik organization. Who are the Bolsheviks? Do you know? The co-chair is a South Asian descent, multiracial face. Megan Romer is white. The National Political Committee, the NPC, they call themselves the NPC. Okay. The NPC include Black, Latino, Asian, and Middle Eastern members, alongside white members. Structural diversity rule. To ensure representation, the DSA Constitution mandates at least 20% of the NPC slots must be reserved for people of color. They have specific identity-based caucuses. I mean, the whole damn thing is anti-white. The whole damn thing is about destroying white people. How many statements did Zoran Mamdani or his lieutenants make? The woman who is now in charge of the rent freezing, rent stabilization program is Sia Weaver, who's the one saying private property is an aspect of white supremacy and that we have to destroy white supremacy by getting rid of private property. Zoran Mamdani put out official literature in his campaign saying we're going to tax the wealthy white people and give it to non-white people. Ben Shapiro looks at this coalition of anti-white psychopaths motivated by racial hatred, and he says, this is white people's fault. This is white people's fault. In a way, it kind of is. In a way, it is. Because we've let people like Ben Shapiro pretend that they're white. He hates white people, actually. Doesn't hide it very well, I guess you could say. Of course, the hypocrisy abounds. It's not exactly new. NYC mayor, bring up that headline for me. NYC Mayor Mamdani defends tenant official after backlash over white supremacy post. Yes, no, she literally thinks private property is white supremacy. I wonder, was it white people that told her that? Was it white people that came up with that theory exactly, I wonder? Or was it Jewish people? I kind of like Ben Shapiro being anti-white. It sort of gives me license to return the favor. It's kind of cool. I kind of like it. The hypocrisy, of course, abounds. Homeowner bashing Daria Lisa Avila Chevalier's father is a landlord and rents his Miami condo for $1,750 a month. Daria Chevalier once called for the government to seize all property from landlords, but her own father is currently renting a Florida condo out for $1,750 a month, the Post has learned. Yeah, I don't know if you're surprised by this, but you should not be. The whole point of the communist system is that the communist rulers do not abide by the restrictions that they impose on everybody else. There is nothing unique or surprising about this, okay? And they have their own self-fulfilling way of rationalizing it within their system. You know, we talked about it a lot when the more communistic members of the American government were violating their own rules during COVID. And at the time, they would make the same justification. I'd always point it out, like Nancy Pelosi. She's like, well, everybody else has to, you know, their salons have to be shut down. They can't go out and get their hair done and their makeup done. But see, she's going on TV and she has to try to sell the system of lockdowns. So in order to fulfill her role upholding the system, then she has to have access to the stuff to make her look good. Otherwise, she's not going to look good on TV. It's not going to be as convincing if she's not, you know, all made up in the way that she normally is. You can't have a raggedy looking person out there, you know, promoting something and having authority. So, you know, she needs to look good. She needs, for the system, for the sake of the party, you know, it's not like she is just taking advantage of the fact that she can ignore the laws that she imposes on everybody else. It's that she's burdened by the responsibility of being the face of the party, and therefore she's required to take advantage of this position. She is obligated to do things that are forbidden to the average person. Like, there's an internal logic to this that makes sense to them, the absolute ghouls. That's how it works. It's like, well, I'm running this big system that's saving everybody. Communism will save everybody. Therefore, anything I do, you know, pushing communism is therefore justified. So, you know, nobody should have millions of dollars, but if I want to go toe-to-toe with these industrial magnates, I mean, don't I need to be able to walk in their shoes? Don't I need to be able to meet them on the ground where they're at? So, I mean, for me, I don't want it or anything, but I guess I am going to have a private plane. Shoot, darn it. Darn it. I mean, I know I'm going to keep all of you in abject poverty, but, you know, I'm trying to support the system here. I'm trying to be a representative for the communist solution that will save everybody. So I'm going to have a nice three-piece suit and I'm going to have to be driven around. I mean, the work I'm doing for our system is so important. I can't be required to adhere to all of the rules that I'm imposing on others. I mean, it's inevitable that this is the way that it goes. It's like Bernie Sanders going from talking about the millionaires to the billionaires as soon as he became a millionaire. But again, I don't think they care. I don't think the voters care. I really don't. I think they agree with the reasoning. I think they feel like Zoran Mamdani is some sort of rough and tumble fighter for them, which he's obviously not. He is from an ultra wealthy Ugandan family that still resides on a gigantic compound in Uganda. They are like the elite of the elite, just like Ilhan Omar's family was involved in the slave trade until very recently. And her father was like second in command in Somalia when they were there. Like, these are not regular people. These are not peasants by any means. These are just foreign elites coming over here and destroying our system by appealing to both their co-ethnics, the other immigrants that have come from overseas and don't actually love America or want to, you know, build our country with us. And yet, you know, they love it if AOC shows up at the Met Gala in a $50,000 dress, $100,000 dress. They don't care. They don't care. It doesn't work to them to go, oh, this person thinks that, you know, Hassan Piker is like the best example. He's like the number one hardcore socialist communist. I mean, he literally is like, you should kill landlords, let the streets run wet, red with their blood. Like, he's as far out there as you can get. Of course, he is a multimillionaire that lives in a multimillion dollar house, and it's constantly brought up as if it matters to them, as if they care. They don't care. The followers don't care. The people doing it don't care. You know, you can call them hypocrites all you want. They don't care. So I don't either. And again, you got to recognize genuinely how much of this is just straight up racial envy. It could be close to damn near 100%. From Christina Pushaw, Mamdani origin story was that he was rejected by white girls in college. Daria Lisa's origin story is rejected by black and Arab men who prefer white women. I'm sensing a theme here. So in an article for the Bowdoin Orient, Mamdani discussed his personal experience with race and feelings of isolation, writing, "While I am now comfortable in my own skin, I can remember wishing for whiteness my first year when I thought certain type of girls were impossible to talk to due to my skin being more kiwi than peach." So you think you ever got over that? You think you ever got over being rejected by white women? And he doesn't say that exactly, but that is what he's saying, 100%. Now, this woman put out an article, put out a tweet, saying, you know, black men and Arab men agree on fetishizing uglier colonizer women. Okay, she means beautiful white women, but she has to try to insult white women by calling them ugly. Are you sensing a theme here? Are you sensing a theme that the radical immigrant socialists are genuinely, in fact, motivated by simple, childish racial hatred and a feeling of impotence and envy of white people? I think this motivates way more in the world than we want to acknowledge. I don't know why we can't. I don't even know how to talk about it myself. I mean, we have talked about it before quite a bit, but like, why do you think foreign men are moving into Europe by the millions? Why do you think they're coming to America by the millions? Because white women are the best, are the most beautiful, are the most desirable, are also, by the way, the most liberal, the most open, because, and this is the key point here, we have a Christian society that allows such things. Elsewhere, they do not, right? This was a tweet I saw, or I think I retweeted it, of somebody saying what specifically white women don't realize, don't seem to be able to get through their heads, is like wearing a bikini, going around in skin-tight shorts. That is only possible because we are a Christian nation. And so our people don't try to rape you. But like, you can't do that in other countries. Which, by the way, is one of the reasons I think there's a lot of, you know, effects that this has. And one of them is that you almost have to become more like them, right? There's a article last week about European women converting to Islam. And it's like, well, it's because they, one thing, gravitate towards feelings of safety. And obviously the Muslims can inflict violence on anybody they want in Europe and nothing's ever done about it. And so they feel like if they were a part of Islam, then maybe they would be protected. But it's also the fact that, you know, if you as a woman, a pretty woman, are walking around constantly getting harassed and propositioned and pinched and whatever else by a bunch of leering perverts, then it probably is a comfort to put a hood over your head and become invisible to them. Like, it almost forces it. In the same way, it's like in Middle Eastern countries, you can't go out without a male relative, and increasingly so in European countries as well. Not because it's a religious imperative or a law that women can't go out, but because women out on their own get attacked. So you got to have a man with you just so you don't get attacked. We don't have that in America because we're white and Christian. And I just don't understand how white women don't understand, because to a large degree they don't. And it's like somebody walking around with a treasure chest full of gold. And you're like, you know, somebody might want to steal that. And they're like, how dare you? I can flaunt my gold wherever I want. It's like, okay, but somebody's going to steal it from you. Somebody's going to take it from you. Do you not understand that you are a precious pearl? You're a precious gem that is like what? How do you not realize what a prize you are, and how people from all over the world are like have hatred for you just because you exist and aren't with them, and have hatred for white men because we do get white women. Like, again, I don't have like a really sophisticated, you know, theory on this. I just think it's obvious that a huge portion of the anti-white hatred is literally born from just unadulterated envy of white people. And I've played you clips before that illustrate it. Sometimes you get people who are honest about it, and that's exactly what they say. So Brad Lander, who was elected in New York, is in a bureau or a borough or a district that is only 40% white, with 28% being foreign born. 41% of his constituents do not speak English at home. Claire Valdez won in New York 7. Her district was only 37% white, 33% foreign born, with 52% not speaking English at home, meaning that whoever they're counting as white is likely white Hispanic. Daria Lisa Avila Chevalier in New York, her district was only 15% white, 35% foreign born, 55% don't speak English at home. So I wasn't even reading that correctly. I was thinking, you know, immigrant families, but no, that's 35% foreign born. So that doesn't even include the, you know, second generation that still speak their home language, their birth language at home. Disproportionate white libs opened the door decades ago, but we're feeling the effects now. We're in a new phase now. It's not stupid college kids. It's third world immigrants and their children voting to take your stuff away. Let me read that again. Disproportionately, white libs opened the doors decades ago, but we're feeling the effects now. We're in a new phase now. It's not stupid college kids. It's third world immigrants and their children voting to take your stuff away. That's all it is. That's it. That's the entirety. That's the whole thing. Oh, you just have to stop them. There's no arguing about it. There's no genuine philosophical, ideological, you know, drive they're pushing towards that is resolute and uncompromising. They don't really believe in anything. They don't really care. Communism is at this point the best method by which they can take over America and dominate white people. So that's what they're doing. It's not that complicated. It's not that sophisticated. It's just we're being taken over, replaced, dominated. That's it. Simple.
Years ago, I said, I want something that supercharges methylene blue.
Yes.
I want something that gives people natural, clean energy without stimulants. And you got together with top formulators and created Methyl Drive and Power Plant. They can individually be taken.
Yes.
Or they can be stacked together with Methylene Blue. You understand all the science. I always butcher all the names. I don't explain how these are the perfect formulas.
Sure.
I've had top formulators say, who made these formulas? These are the best. These are available at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds our operation. You develop these with top formulators. These are great, already best-selling products without me even promoting them. Tell us about Power Plant and Methyl Drive right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we've got hundreds of thousands of people that have taken ultramethylene blue since we started selling it on the alexjonesstore.com. This is an incredible product. This is a super powerful metabolic ingredient. Methylene blue's structure, you have nitrogen, 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 sulfur, chlorine. The chlorine is what gives it its dye properties. That's why it's used as a medical dye, medical grade, what we have. The sulfur donates an electron to your mitochondrial process. So what that means is it speeds it up through the Krebs cycle to what makes where it makes more energy, and the energy that it makes more efficiently. So you get less waste product, more energy, more ATP. That's why it's a super powerful nootropic.
It skips something in the mitochondria.
It skips the oxidization process in the cells. It skips through the Krebs cycle from stage one into stage four, oxidative phosphorylation. Nothing else does this.
That's the ultimate antioxidant.
The ultimate antioxidant. That's ultramethylene blue. Now, the key to human health, this is what's being discovered, is mitochondrial health, right? 20th century, they try to treat symptoms and keep you alive. 21st century, it's all the people you watched on Rogan over the years proven to be correct. It's about the mitochondria. It's about cell division. It's about senescent cells and their waste products that they make. Methyl Drive, there's that iconic ad of you, Dad, where you go, the CoQ10, the PQQ. That is what this is. CoQ10, PQQ, magnesium, and then methylcobalamin, the ultimate vitamin B12 in the bioavailable form. That's all together in Methyl Drive. It's about protecting your mitochondria. We've got tons of ingredients in there to do that in Methyl Drive. With Power Plant as well, people report this almost universally with the methylene blue. Incredible energy, incredible resilience, incredible endurance. What I wanted to create with Power Plant, we kind of have the ultimate cellular engine thing in Methyl Drive. With Power Plant, this is kind of the men and women can both take it. It's like a unisex super male vitality, where you have things in here like the cordyceps mushroom that boosts oxygen carrying capacity and ATP, which is also phenomenal for the mitochondria, plus the Rhodiola rosea, also known as Viking root or golden root. But even more so than that, it lowers your cortisol. And when you lower your cortisol, studies have shown that your testosterone increases because they're made from the same building block, which is cholesterol. Of course, that's why ashwagandha is so incredible. You saw that product as well. It takes the fuel source from making cortisol into making testosterone. Since they're both hormones, we got zinc in here as well to raise testosterone, help with healthy testosterone, selenium to do the same thing. And then we've got the boron, which is so underrated.
Nobody ever talks about that.
No one ever talks about boron. You can look at all these different male vitality supplements. If you're a wife out there, you want to get something for your husband, Power Plant, Adaptogen Complex, we got Methyl Drive. These really are made to be taken in tandem. This is a trifecta. Yeah, this is the Mac Daddy stack. Okay, you want to be a Mac Daddy, you buy Power Plant, Methyl Drive, and Methylene Blue. Okay.
We have the Power Plant bundle discounted, Power Plant, yes. Methyl Drive, and Methylene Blue together right now at thealexjonesstore.com. It really is amazing, and it funds the operation. You're going to be addicted if you get it.
You guys really need to get this. If you're looking for a physical improvement, a mental improvement, that Power Plant formula combined with the Methyl Drive and the Methylene Blue, but any one of these taken separately, if you're older and you get the Methyl Drive, you are going to love this product. If you're younger and you're big into exercise, you're going to love the Power Plant. I'm really impressed with this, and I'm thankful Bigly let me develop these products. Nobody has taken this and given me a bad review. Nobody has taken this and giving me a bad review. And combined together with the Methylene Blue, it's a deal that's too good to be true.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. So Ben Shapiro blames the success of the Democratic Socialists of America on white people. It's kind of offensive, quite frankly, especially the way that he used the term. You can sense the anti-whiteism. You know, he tries to conceal it, but it evinces itself regardless. And again, I'm kind of glad to see him just come out and say it this way. Can we play it again? I want to hear the disdain with which he, how do you say, worthless white people, something like that. Can we hear it again?
Who's leading all of this? Who's leading all of this? Who is the DSA? As we pointed out, it is overeducated, useless white people. It is
overeducated, useless Jews. Okay. I just want to make sure I'm using terms that aren't offensive. And I know if Ben Shapiro used it, it's certainly not offensive. Because, you know, far be it from him to ever insult white people. So, sorry, overeducated, useless Jews. That's a term I can use? Great. Wonderful. I'll use it. I'll take it. As pointed out by Bumbadum14 on X, in response, of course, to Ben Shapiro. Now he's crying about the effect of his desire. He says, by the way, I don't give a damn about the so-called browning of America. Color doesn't matter. Ideology does. To which Bumbadum responds, neocons and Jews like Ben Shapiro spent the last 10 to 20 years calling any conservative that bemoaned legal and illegal immigration as a racist and would laugh at any claim that assimilation wouldn't happen. It's about culture, not race, they would say. Now, 20 years later, every major metro in America has been ethnically transformed into a Lovecraftian ball of mystery meat mass, only bound by their never-ending resentment and hatred of whites. The irony, of course, is that this ball of meat that Jean Raspail could never come close to describing isn't capable of the nuance to delineate whites from Jews. The end result is the DSA taking footholds among the American left in those minority-majority communities where campaigns are exclusively run on anti-white politics and, ironically, anti-Jew politics. So what did Jews like and neocons like Ben Shapiro learn? Well, nothing, of course. That's why he defaults to blaming whites when the reality is that these districts are less than 20% white and all the campaign material is anti-white grievance politics to satiate race communism, the bottom 2% of humanity. Okay. Of course, we don't have to hear from him. We can go to clip number 11 here. This is a rabbi, Joshua Stanton, again, explaining the reasoning and purpose behind this. Let's watch.
In America today, we have white supremacy. In the Torah, we had Amalek. Amalek is seen as the eternal enemy of our people, whose members found strength by making us suffer. Therefore, when the Lord your God grants you safety from all your enemies around you, and the land that the Lord your God is giving to you as a hereditary portion, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. Our rabbinic sages parse these sentences and derive two distinct meanings. Blotting out the memory of Amalek is a military command, literally to destroy Amalek. Now facing today's Amalek, we are reminded that the Torah calls us not just to escape, but to extirpate Amalek. We are commanded to do real and literal battle against it. That means coming off the bench in the fight against white supremacy. It means putting our reputations and our money and our physical bodies on the line. But also so that we are ready to answer people with radically destructive and incoherent versions of history. So that we can counter white supremacists. So that we can counter Amalek and blot them out by retaining on our lips and in our records their history. By being bearers of history, we can help guide the future. Blotting out Amalek need not merely be about military conquest. Equally important is ideological victory. And nothing could more readily counter white supremacy than a Jewish community proudly helping our Muslim neighbors. There is nothing that undermines a white supremacist worldview more than diverse communities getting along and building together towards the future.
And then once we get exactly what we want and it blows up in our stupid faces, we'll blame the white people for letting us do it. We'll blame the white college age women for believing their professors who we taught and instructed in exactly what I just laid out. So what's the problem again? Where's the problem again, Ben? Are you not destroying Amalek? Is that not your purpose? Now, this video, this post has gone totally viral. It's from 4chan all the way back in 2021, but it's even more accurate now than it was then. It's got some pretty spicy language. I'll try to clean it up a little bit, but I think it's interesting. I'm not saying I necessarily agree with it, but it's certainly a point of view. He says, I'm a Jew. Jew here. Have you ever played a video game where the AI just sat there and did nothing while you took it apart methodically? We won in a game nobody else was playing because they did not think anyone was stupid enough to do so. Our victory? We killed our host. The survivors will hate us. The blacks will eat us because we look white. The Muslims will exterminate us the moment our goy slaves become too weak to protect us. Not to mention we're giving Muslims nuclear weapons by giving them France and England. Our daughters miscegenate or are whores. My favorite niece married a Jewish black guy who was 20 years older than her. Lived in a Jewish black neighborhood. Her house was the only one that did not look like crap because she tried. Ended up divorced with a half black kid. Breaks my heart. Brother is incel, can't find a wife because all women are whores. Almost all the men in the extended family are ruined, either marrying roasties or failing to marry at all. And why? Because the weapons we set on the goy cattle also affect us. So yay, we won by default because nobody else was dumb enough to try for a game of let's destroy civilization. Our victory is such that our host species is going extinct due to our actions, and the only two paths forward are 1, whites finally wake up and kill us all, 2, whites finally die out and black people eat us for being white. Great victory, you idiots. I did miss one. I tried to block them all out. Yeah, look, like I said, I didn't write this. I don't necessarily agree. This is very vitriolic, very angry. The man needs Jesus, I think. I think I have the solution. It's a very, I sense a very hateful undercurrent from these statements. But I can't disagree with the conclusion. I mean, it certainly seems like white people are going extinct, and I don't know what the plan is after that. I mean, you got people like this jokester rabbi over here talking about white people are all Amalek and they have to be blotted out. You're white, dumbass, at least according to the people you're using to carry this out. Did nobody think about this? Nobody thought about this, huh? Interesting. It's a little bit infuriating. It's a little bit exhausting having to go through all of this. And again, it's not just that they are voting for communists and like the Democrats just simply understand that. You know, it's like the videos that we show. Hell, there's another one out today. There's a new video from the stabbing of Henry Novak. And it's got the knifeman lying to police, saying he wasn't stabbed, and saying that, you know, the kid just hurled racial abuse at him. And it's like he knows the police are going to believe him. Or, you know, any of the videos that we showed one yesterday of the black guy fighting the white guy and the cop runs up and holds the white guy's arms down while he's getting punched in the face. And it's like they know they can get away with it. They know there's not going to be any consequence. They know that there's no punishment, and that's the only reason that they would not do something. Again, I believe genuinely every single human being can, if given the right incentive and if instructed correctly, if actually indoctrinated into a beneficial and universal worldview like Christianity, I genuinely believe everybody can come to understand second order effects and the purpose of self-reliance and self-containment. Like you don't need somebody to punish you to do the right thing. You should be able to do it on your own. And I genuinely believe every human being of every race, color, and creed is capable of understanding that. But a lot of them don't. But a lot of them refuse to and have no reason to. So when it comes to someone like Zohran Mamdani or any Democrat for that matter, they have absolutely, like, they don't believe in our system. So they're not just going to be like, well, if I don't behave, then our system goes down. They don't like our system. They want our system to go down. That's not a motivation for them. Oh, well, you got to do the right, you know, we're all in this together. They don't see it that way. They see us as two distinct populations. And whenever you do worse, they're doing better. Like, it, you know, it's a zero sum mindset that they operate on, a dog eat dog mindset that we're being infiltrated with. So when Zohran Mamdani becomes mayor of New York City and gets invited to the White House and pat on the head by Donald Trump, he's really feeling confident. He's feeling so confident, the day that the Supreme Court decision about temporary protected status came out, the day it came out, he put out a statement saying that he would not be adhering to it, which if you watched the show yesterday, basically what I spent the entire show on, the fact that it does not matter what the Supreme Court says because these people don't care, won't listen to it, and aren't punished. So they're going to keep doing that. And we played the videos of the DEI operators. And they're like, yeah, the Supreme Court said we're not allowed to, but nobody came to talk to me about it. Nobody from the authorities came and made me do it. So I'm just going to pretend to be ignorant to it. So it's really, really, really not that complicated, folks. If you have somebody like Zoran Mamdani coming out and saying, the Supreme Court decided one thing, the federal government says one thing, but I'm deciding another because I'm mayor of a city, the appropriate reaction is to deport him. That's it. It's like, that's what you just have to do. And you have to look around at all the other mayors, go, anybody else want to not do what you're obligated legally to do? No? You're all falling into line? Great. Wonderful. That's how it'll work. But instead, they're pushing the boundaries. They're pushing the limits. They're seeing what they can get away with. They're sort of A and B testing their most extreme policies. And they're doing it at an increasing clip, at a more rapid rate as time goes on. Just in the last few days, I've seen Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, Jayapal, and Mamdani all openly espousing their desire to either end the Electoral College and or pack the Supreme Court. And like, it's, they're going to destroy everything because nobody is stopping them. It's not legal what they're doing. It is not up to the mayor of New York City whether or not to comply with federal immigration law. It's just not. Will we do anything about it, or will we let them get away with it? Because so far, every time something like this has come up, we've let them get away with it. And this is true whether it's the fraud in Minnesota or the ICE attacks on ICE facilities and the protest that got two people killed because they were physically attacking ICE officers while they were trying to arrest dangerous criminals. And every time, what happens? The Democrats get what they want. They burn down cities for George Floyd. They get the policies they're demanding. They go out and attack ICE officers. ICE officers retreat and let the illegal immigrants stay. Zoran Mamdani promises to protect the invaders that no longer have temporary protected status. Is anything going to happen about this? Is anything going to happen? Are you actually going to punish him for that? Because if not, I don't want to hear you talking about communism. Like, Donald Trump is out there making statements about the danger of communism, how he's waited his whole life to fight communism, how he's prepared for this, and he understands the you know, real stakes of this combat. And it's like, if you did, then you wouldn't have deported 10 million people by now, because that's what's bringing the communism to this country. You would have deported Zoran Mamdani because he is in blatant, incontrovertible, undeniable violation of his visa conditions. He is publicly avowed and participated in activities with communist organizations. As an immigrant, he swore an oath to not do that. He did it. You can deport him. Why aren't we? Why aren't we? Why aren't we doing that? Can Ben Shapiro tell me? Is it white people? I don't think it is. And the good news is white people are getting over the fear. White people are very much getting over the fear. And the thing is, whether it's anti-Semitism or racism or whatever else it is, would you people just listen to me? Like, would you just listen to Alex Jones and myself? Because we have been fighting this stuff as aggressively as anybody. White people especially have this thing where they will be completely blind, completely deaf, completely openly reject anything that they even think might get close to anti-Semitism. Then something will happen. A switch will get flipped. A light bulb goes off. And they go from, you know, 100% Israel first, how dare you, you know, threaten our greatest ally, to like, have you heard about this Hitler guy? He's actually really smart. And it's like, we don't need to jump from extreme to extreme. We don't need to go from, oh, well, white people are all evil, to actually we should kill all the non-white people. It's like, can we just stick with classic Americana? Can we just stick with genuine equality under the law? That's all we need. That's all we require. If we just get rid of the anti-white crap, get rid of the immigration crap that is predicated on being anti-white and trying to get rid of white supremacy by literally breeding white people out of existence. Can we just maintain a universal standard of behavior and just stick with that and understand, like, because it's almost like people fall for the belief that, like, not hating white people is white supremacy. So they're like, I guess I'm a white supremacist. It's like, no, you can just not hate white people. And you shouldn't hate white people. And nobody of any race should hate white people. Because nobody of any race should hate any other race. This is actually the true belief. This is actually reality. And so I'm, like, kind of worried, because what's going to happen is people are just going to go all the way to the other end of the spectrum. And it's going to, you know, ruin everything, basically. When if you can just, like, everything I say on air, like, maybe some people would want to portray it as bigoted in one way or another. But there's nothing I've ever said on this show, on anything, that I would not show to any Jewish person, any black person, any Hispanic person, any Muslim person. Because what I'm saying is true. Because I genuinely don't hate anybody. And because what I'm pointing out, if I am criticizing these groups, is these groups themselves predicating their actions on their group identity, which makes it therefore a valid target of criticism. I'm a little bit worried that people don't have the subtlety necessary to discuss this stuff. And that while an awakening is happening of racial consciousness on white people's side, if it goes too far, if people genuinely embrace the idea that, like, I guess white people are supreme and should rule over everybody else, and we have to kill them before they kill us. Like, if we take the Jewish-Israeli mindset of just, like, we're under constant threat, we have to kill, like, it's just not gonna go well for anybody. And it's going to drive a lot of people away who, yeah, maybe they look around and go, gee, white people sure are discriminated against. But if every white person talking about that is a genuine, dyed-in-the-wool, offensive racist, like, they're going to reject you because people in general, white people in particular, very nice. We really are nice. We really don't want to offend anybody. We really don't want to be bigoted against anybody. Which, again, is like, you go online and people think that you just need to, like, you know, Alex will play the clips of that handsome truth guy. Like, that is such a ineffective and really has a contrary effectiveness to what you're trying to do. And not because, you know, I mean, in a way, people are kind of brainwashed, but for the most part, most Americans, they're just ignorant. They just don't know. And they're just good people, and they just don't want to offend anybody, and they just don't want to insult anybody, and they treat others as they like to be treated, and they like their religion, so why wouldn't you like yours? And hey, we're all just human beings here. Like, that's how they really feel. So when they hear you saying something offensive about a race or a religion or anything else, they reject it internally. Like, it's not an external force that's stopping them from accepting the truth you're yelling at them. It can be your own style of doing it. Maybe I'm not always as effective as maybe I could be in making these arguments, but I like to think, and I know for a fact that I have, you know, regular viewers, regular listeners of every race, color, and creed who agree with me on pretty much everything. Maybe every once in a while. I had a guy the other day that was like saying I was driving away conservative Muslims for some reason. But, like, look, I'm just telling the truth, and I'm just being honest. And by the way, I genuinely find it offensive that you would expect me to not oppose you. Do you understand? Like, if I were to, you know, I just always use Japan, but really you can use any other country. But if I want to move to Mongolia and the Mongolians are like, we don't want you here, we don't want Europeans here, we don't want white people, we don't want Christians, this is our country. Like, I cannot put myself in the mindset that would even be offended at that, let alone outraged, let alone, you know, like, this is the worst thing in the world. It is such a foreign mindset to me this idea of like, and that's what happens. When I was talking to Sneeko a couple months ago, it was the same type of thing where he kept being like, yeah, but don't you, you know, like Muslims are only 1%. It's just like, why are you trying to get me to be like, no, yeah, you could take over my country, actually. Actually, I'm bad for wanting foreigners with diametrically opposed beliefs to me to not be in my country. Like, no, I'm an American. I'm a human being. I'm a Christian. I'm a white person. I'm going to defend my people, and I would expect you to do the same. And the fact that you're offended that I'm doing that is not real. It's just that you have no other debate tactic. So you want to try to weaponize white guilt in your favor. I don't have white guilt. I don't need white guilt. No, thank you. I've tried it. It's not for me. And the thing about this that I don't know, I feel like an extra obligation, like a burden to do this, because I know a lot of people, like, listen, folks, God bless a lot of people on the right, but a lot of them have never been around minorities. It's just like the truth. And you can just kind of tell from the way they talk about it. And it's true on the left wing too, obviously. Most white people that are most vehemently pro-diversity live in the whitest places. But like, you know, I hate to say it. If you grew up in Idaho, like, I don't know how much experience you have talking to Jewish people or black people or living around them. I was always a minority from elementary school on. White people were not the majority of people I was around. And I've been to a lot of Jewish organizations, Jewish holidays. I mean, it's like I have a lot of experience around a lot of non-white people, and I grew up that way. So to me, it's like, you know, I genuinely do think it's like a sort of weird reverse, like, oh, I'm white, so I don't want to make them feel bad. You know, like, oh, I can't advocate for white people because then the poor black and Hispanics will feel so bad about not being white or something. I don't know what the mindset is, but I grew up in inner city Houston where it's just like, there's just a fact of life and you just stand up for yourself because everybody does. And you understand that black people are people that have agency and make decisions. You don't have to coddle them. You don't have to treat them like they're babies that need white people to build them up and, you know, provide everything for them. You can hold them to account, actually. Actually, you can not treat them as something way over there that you never interact with, but, oh, care so much about. If you actually cared about them, maybe you'd get to know them. And if you actually got to know them, maybe you wouldn't treat them like they're not human. So I don't know. We got to get over it. We got to get over it, white people. You're not special. You're not in charge anymore. You're not even the majority anymore. Stop feeling sorry for these people. Defend yourself.
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026, and they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this and the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one. Very simple. America 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you really got to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.